this epidemic exposes the value that Black businesses have, particularly beauty salons and barber shops in this country, but they're not receiving the investment and the respect from the federal government.
Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your co-host, Natasha S. Alford.
And I'm your co-host, Todd Johnson.
And this week we are asking, Dear Culture, how can Black people survive being on the front lines of this pandemic? This past week, we saw calls from governors in states like Georgia, Texas, and Arkansas to reopen some businesses in the middle of this coronavirus pandemic. That's right. This is a pandemic that's killed 56,000 Americans and counting, and more than 200,000 people worldwide.
Governor Brian Kemp in Georgia has allowed for beauty salons, barbershops, theaters, restaurants, and religious institutions to reopen on a limited basis.
But many Black business owners simply said, hell nah.
Our first concern is the safety of our employees and our customers. And we have an incentive to open, and we could use that incentive, and we definitely want to make money. At this time, as a business, we aren't comfortable opening. So we're going to wait a while before we reopen, because in our community, people who look like her husband, there are more of us that are dying, unfortunately. And it's because of pre-existing conditions, which make your immune system weaker, which includes things like diabetes, hypertension, things of that nature. So we don't want our customers or our barbers in danger. And we want to wait it out, like the old people in the South say, just hold on and wait a little while longer.
That was Killer Mike you just heard. He's owner of the Swag Shop Barbershops in Atlanta.
And some business owners, like 2 Chainz, said they'd open with caution, then they changed their mind.
Turns out they had every reason to be cautious. Coronavirus cases in Georgia jumped by 500 cases in just one day after shutdown orders were lifted, something Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms has been calling out.
Because somebody is just antsy, or somebody who has some real needs, people are ready to go about their day-to-day business. But for each day that we take 5 steps back, it's gonna set us back even further. And we're not gonna get to the light at the end of the tunnel if we keep turning around and walking backwards. And that's what we're doing in this state. And that's what I fear is about to happen in Alabama and across any number of states in this country.
All of this conversation speaks to concerns that the community has about whether we can trust these calls to reopen.
So, Natasha, what do you think? Are you going to a hair salon anytime soon?
Yeah, that's going to be a no for me. It's just too soon, too early, and too many Black people are disproportionately dying from this pandemic. What about you? If you lived in Georgia, would you be going outside right now?
I wouldn't be. I have a young son. I have a wife. We're at home and we are blessed that we can work from home. But I just wouldn't risk it. I wouldn't touch it. I wouldn't do it.
I talked to my dad. You know, he's actually undergoing chemotherapy right now. And we, you know, can't be in the same house, of as much as I would love to be on the same roof with him to show support. But we did have a conversation, and he thought about, you know, back in the 70s and the 60s when the Vietnam War was happening. And it was Black soldiers who were suffering disproportionately. They were dying at a higher rate, even though they only represented a small minority of the U.S. population. Similarly, when you think about the Tuskegee experiment, it was a 40-year experiment where Black men were told they were getting health care from the government and that it was free, but instead they were being allowed to die from untreated syphilis. And so when there's skepticism or distrust of the government in the African-American community, it's very much warranted.
Shout out to your pops. I mean, you know, I wish him the best, for real.
Definitely appreciate the well wishes to my family. And, you know, we at The Griot, we're sending love to all of the families who are impacted by this. So the government has failed Black people in a lot of ways, from health to employment, and now another big issue raised by coronavirus, education.
Improvisation is the African-American occupation.
We're in a time where many Black parents have had to improvise, turning themselves into teachers and their homes into schools. And a lot of us who are improvising are doing something Black people as a whole have learned to do throughout time, So we turn to legendary historian and Harvard professor Dr. Henry Louis Gates Jr. to talk more about what we can learn from the past for the present. Dr. Gates, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I love the griot, and thank you for interviewing me.
Dr. Gates, can you just speak to a little bit about just historically how Black students and Black people have always, in the face of whether it was pandemics or slavery or different movements to gain more rights, have always sort of had to scratch and claw and fight and plead and demand for equal access to education?
One of the aspects of our oppression has been denying us access to quality education, denying us access to the most sophisticated tools of pedagogy. And that has been structural and systematic from the get-go. I mean, first of all, it's coterminous with the Black presence in the United States. It was illegal to teach our ancestors to read and write. So there you go. I mean, that's inscribed in the, as it were, historical DNA of the American educational system vis-a-vis Black people, so that we are continuing these structural misalignments in terms of access to education. And that is a war against our people. When I was growing up, the blackest thing you could be was an educated man or an educated woman. That was drummed into us that if you know, our heroes were doctors and lawyers and dentists and teachers. You know, my parents never called one of my teachers. Now, I'm in public school for 12 years, and my parents never called one of my teachers by their first name, ever. And although these teachers were younger than they, and that was a sign of just respect for the educational system, because Black people had it drummed into our consciousness that the way out of Jim Crow segregation was education, education, education. And so for my brother, who's an oral surgeon, he's now retired, and me, there never was a question. We were going to do our homework. My mother would drill us at night. If we had a public performance, we would practice at home, you know, before we went to school. My mother was a demon on education. and thank God she was, because she was right. And now we have to fight these structural limitations against our people, which are tied to not only to race, but to class and class differentials. So that's why I'm glad that we've developed these online tools. Selma Online, which is the history of the civil rights movement. It took us 5 years to do this project. It was released on March 7th, and that's the 55th anniversary of Bloody Sunday, when John Lewis and the other civil rights marchers were beaten to a pulp. And we had no idea, of course, and nobody could, only God, that the coronavirus would lead to the shutdown of schools and necessitate distance learning. And simultaneously, Robert Smith, who, as you know, is the wealthiest African American in the United States, a man I admire enormously, he called me about a year ago. He said, "I like your long form films, but our young people have short attention spans. So do you think you could do a series of Black History lessons, 2 minutes long videos?" So we started a company together. We finished 62-minute videos, and go to www.blackhistoryin2minutes.com. We are ready, and the tools are already there for teachers of middle school and high school, and for families just sitting around trying not to, you know, go crazy and who want something entertaining to talk about as a family. They can study the history of Black people. We start in the 1500s, when really the first African Americans landed in North America and they got to Florida. The first Black man was a Black conquistador. He wasn't even a slave. His name was Juan Garrido. And so we have an episode about him going all the way up to Barack Obama's election, of course.
I think it really is incredible. And I think it speaks to What we said when we started this call, actually, before we recorded, about the improvisation, people of means in our history, taking our own story and education into our own hands. Professor, I want to ask you, though, in that same vein, how does specifically something like COVID-19 sort of make that educational journey for Black families and Black students that much more difficult when we're facing a public health crisis?
These are all African-American communities, or the percentage of Blackness is just astonishing. It's horrible. It's just horrible. People with pre-existing conditions, you know, asthma, tuberculosis, high blood pressure, you know, poor access to healthy food, people live near factories, but the huge percentage of the deaths are of African Americans in these 10 states in the South and in these five major cities, starting with Washington, D.C., where 79% of the deaths are people of African descent. So this is the most urgent war we could ever be engaged in combating, and we all have to pull together and insist that the government increase testing, whatever normal is going to look like when all this is over. And for goodness sake, don't we mess around with disinfectant like certain people in this country are trying to encourage people to inject themselves with.
Dr. Gates, you know, what you're saying speaks to the importance of education and working from, you know, the facts. A lot of Black parents were already homeschooling prior to coronavirus because they were worried about racism and they were worried about disparities and wanted to teach their children their own way. This presents yet again another opportunity to innovate and to connect and teach our children the things that we want them to know.
Absolutely. And that's crucial because we need to take control of the content being offered to our students. There's some very conservative school districts out there that don't want to see the true story of our people integrated into the curriculum. And the only way around that is that we teach our children ourselves, and distance learning facilitates that. I've always thought our Sunday schools should be God and Jesus, of course, but also about Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington. We have a built-in audience, a built-in structure. So please encourage your listeners to, or your readers to go to www.blackhistoryin2minutes.com and www.selmaonline.org. I would be deeply, deeply appreciative.
Oh, well, we appreciate you, Dr. Henry Louis Gates Jr. Thank you for joining the Dear Culture podcast. So you were right. We have listeners and readers now who are looking forward to following up on this. Lots of happy parents will come out of this conversation. That's for sure.
God bless you. Stay safe, sanitize, stay healthy.
That was historian and professor Dr. Henry Louis Gates Jr. providing important context to how our communities have been improvising in crisis throughout Black history. Now let's chat with Shauna Pinnock, the Griot's social media director, for this week's Moment of Clarity.
Hey y'all, I'm Shauna, and in this week's Moment of Clarity, we give you the latest news about HBO Max's new feature documentary, On the Record. This doc is supposed to expose the sexual misconduct allegations posed by Drew Dixon, a former music executive who used to work with Russell Simmons at Def Jam. Let's take a listen.
I had asked her, do you want to go to the police? She was like, no one's going to take me seriously. Who's going to believe me?
If white women are not believed, what do you think is happening to Black women in America when we come forward with stories about sexual violence?
I don't have a stitch of violence in me. I would never hurt anybody.
You're worried as a Black woman that you'll say something that will have consequences that you hadn't anticipated.
He's the king of hip-hop. The Black community will hate my guts. I didn't want to let the culture down. I love the culture.
For me, I'll say this. First off, I have to preface it with, I am so proud of Drew Dixon and all the other women who have come forward to speak about this entire situation and to essentially give a voice to Black women in the age of the Me Too movement, right? So unfortunately, what I think that's going to come out of this, I think there's a positive and a negative. I'll go with the negative first. It's all too often that we hear that the Me Too movement was meant to tear down the Black man, you know, which is infuriating in and of itself. I mean, I love Black men. You know, my daddy is a Black man. My brother is a Black man. The men I, you know, do the bum chicka wow wow, you know, with are Black men. But, you know, I will never, for me personally, I will never love, protect, support Black men on the backs of and at the abuse of Black women. Like, absolutely not. I mean, for me, it's like Malcolm X said it best, you know, the most unvalued in America is the Black woman. You know, it's the most disrespected person in America is the Black woman. And, you know, as a Black woman, I can tell you, we are taught from a very early age that, you know, at the end of the day, you got to protect the Black man. You got to love the Black man. You got to uplift the Black man. But then, you know, that's all great and fine and wonderful. But what about us? You know, we get disrespected. We not only have to deal with, you know, patriarchy and misogyny, but we also have to deal with racism. Black women coming out and saying, you know, hey, I was attacked by this Black man. I was abused by this Black man, whether that is physical abuse, whether that is sexual abuse, anything like that. The automatic response is usually, oh, well, no. We need more proof than that. And what, let's say if I provided you with a video, R. Kelly, let's say I provided you with a video and you're still talking about you don't believe me. So what's the point? I love Black men. Y'all got it? Cool. But if it ever comes down to, if I have to choose between Black men and Black women, I will always choose Black women, because at the end of the day, we are all we got.
How do we tackle these tricky conversations when you have people who are so divided, who think that, you know, they know someone personally and they just don't see them as being capable? The person is, you know, continuing to deny that they did anything wrong. Like, how do you think this will continue to play out now that the documentary is going to be live?
First off, where I get so frustrated with people, and I get it, you know, Kamora Lee and her daughters and defending their father, I wouldn't expect them not to, you know, plain and simple. Same way how, you know, Bill Cosby's daughters, I wouldn't expect them to be like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, my dad's a rapist and blah, blah, blah. Like, no, I don't expect that at all. And that is a grace that I can very easily grant to them. However, the person that you know doesn't necessarily have to show you all of the facets of themselves. So it is very easy for predators to be able to wear a mask around everybody else except for their victims. Like, if you're all good, sir, you fled to Bali where there's no extradition treaty with the United States because you heard, you know, whispers that an indictment would probably be coming down. Nah, bruh, something in the water ain't clean. I fear for these women, and I really hope that they have a great support system in place, because it is going to be pretty tough for them. But what I am hoping to see is more solidarity from other women coming through, as well as perhaps maybe even a smidgen, a modicum of Black men who will come in and, you know, believe these women.
Well, thank you, Shauna, for that moment of clarity about the latest documentary that's coming out, Accusers of Russell Simmons, who we know as the leader, former leader of Def Jam.
I want to remind our listeners to support and show love to your local Black businesses. Donate to your local organizations and religious institutions. The business that we will highlight this week is Black Card Revoked, a fun and nostalgia-filled game celebrating American Black pop culture.
It's definitely going to set off hilarious debates that can turn serious quickly, no matter the ages of the people in your family. So before you step into this game, you might want to freshen up on your Black history and facts. Don't be the person to get your Black card revoked. The Griot has published a list of 50-plus Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. If you'd like your business to be featured, email us at info@thegriot.com. That's G-R-I-O.
Thank you for listening to Dear Culture. If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast. Make sure you share it with everyone that you know.
And before we go, we want to ask our listeners, what's it been like for y'all in quarantine? How have you been making the space to hustle, grow, and stay safe during this time? Go ahead and slide into our DMs at Dear Culture Pod on IG or Twitter, and we'll be looking out for your messages. The Dear Culture Podcast is brought to you by The Griot, a And this episode was executive produced by Natasha S. Alford and Kevin Y. Brown. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next week.